Guru Dara Sani Dani Rahi Kare Darshani Sayanandar Hi Ki Kahi Bhavale Garuda Stambena Tale Acheye Kami Makale Se Kala Barila Ashujale. Standing near the Garuda Stamba, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would look upon Lord Jagannath. What can be said about the strength of that love? On the ground, beneath the column of the Garuda Stamba, was a deep ditch, and that ditch was filled with the water of Mahaprabhu's tears. The front of the temple of Jagannath is a column on which the statue of Garuda is situated. It is called Garuda Stamba. Behind that column is a ditch, and that ditch was filled with the tears of the Lord. These are just some small verses reminding us of different pastimes of the Lord in Madhya Lila. So here, again, in the previous verse, we were in Kurukshetra and discussing the mood of Rathiyatra in relation to Kurukshetra. And this verse, now we're back, we're in Puri itself, and we're standing in the temple of Jagannath. Has anyone been there? Have you been to Puri, to the temple? Have you seen the Garuda Stamba? Have you seen? Did you notice there's some fingerprints there in the Garuda Stamba? It was described to me that Lord Chaitanya's fingerprints were there. When he was holding onto the Stamba, he was in so much ecstasy that the stone melted. And this, of course, also happened when Lord Jagannath goes for 2 weeks in for the Anavasara ceremony, where he spends in seclusion he goes 2 weeks in seclusion with Lakshmi Devi for some confidential Raha Leela, secret Leelas, pastimes. And during that time, feeling great separation, Lord Chaitanya goes to Alanath temple. And when he went to Alanath temple, when he first went there, he was feeling so much separation. His body was totally inflamed. It was like a burning cinder, a 7 foot long burning cinder, because he was 7 feet tall, very tall. When he went there, he went and paid dandavats to Alanath. Alanath is a Vishnu, I believe it's a Vishnu deity. I was there once, I got in there a long time ago. Now they don't let Western devotees in there. It's a black stone four-handed form of Vishnu. And when Lord Chaitanya did dandavats there in front, his body melted the stone in 8 different places. His feet, his knees, and his chest, 2, 4, 5, and his hands, 6, and his face, 7. Something like 7 or 8 places. And then they moved that stone and made a little temple for it recently, a little dome roof is there. And you can see that stone with the impressions where the stone melted from the transcendental body of Lord Chaitanya. The same thing when he was holding on to the Garuda Stamba, he also melted the stone. And this is because when Lord Chaitanya first went to Puri, he couldn't control himself. In fact, when he first came to Puri from Mayapur, and he got to the Ataranala Bridge. The Ataranala means there are 18 arches. There's 18 arches in that bridge. It goes over the Barginadi River, which flows right nearby the Puri temple. So when he got there and he saw the chakra and the flag of Jagannath's temple in the distance, which is about 6 kilometers away, Lord Chaitanya started running full speed, 6 kilometers. So Lord Chaitanya started running full speed to see the Lord. In fact, one time, described, Lord Chaitanya is so much in the ecstasy of, so anxious and so much utkantika, so much eagerness to see the Lord, utkantika bhav, that when he was walking, he looked up at the chakra. He looked up at the chakra. This is explained in Chaitanya Mangal. And he said, oh, he said, there he is. There's that beautiful boy playing the flute, that beautiful blue boy. And he was with some of his associates. Do you see him? He's with Sri Damodar and Ramananda Roy. And then they looked. They said, they looked at each other, they didn't see. And he said, oh, he's so beautiful, Gopal. And Lord Chaitanya is just looking up, and the chakra and the temple dome is very high and very far away. It's 200-300 feet up in the air, and he was way down the road, temple road. And they said, yes, my lord, we see him. So And this very first time, he ran the 6 kilometers all the way to the temple. He ran in the temple, and when he saw his Lord, he saw Krishna playing the flute, Muralidhar, Murali Manohar. And he ran past the Guru's temple, and he ran all the way across, up the steps, to embrace Lord Jagannath, Rajendranandan and Krishna. And then in the ecstasy to go embrace him, then he just fell. And he fell unconscious. And the pujari was very disturbed and alarmed because he thought that some madman, of course he was mad, but transcendentally mad, mad in love, Mahabhav, Divyonmad, transcendental madness of Mahabhav. He wanted to beat this person because he said, oh, he's trying to harm the Lord, he's trying to break the Lord or harm the deity or something. But then Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya came there and he understood by various symptoms that this was a great avadut, Mahapurush. And then he came to understand it was the Supreme Lord himself. And he offered prayers, 100 prayers to Lord Chaitanya, and we spoke on one the other day for the Vishru Mahotsav, by Ragya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yoga, where he says, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Sharira Dari, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Sharira Dari, that Sri Krishna has Sharira Dari, he's holding Dara, he's taken or he's holding the form of Lord Chaitanya, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Dari, Shikshartam. Then Shikshartam, he's come to teach, he's come as a Shiksha Guru. Krishna has come as a Shiksha Guru to teach Vairagya and Vidya, by giving Bhakti, because the two sons of Bhakti Devi has two sons, like you have a daughter, Bhakti Devi has two sons, or two daughters, I think, is it a daughter? I think it's sons. Has two sons. One son is Vidya and one son is Vairagya. These are the two sons of Bhakti Devi. She's the mother, Mother Bhakti. So she has two sons. So if you have Bhakti, then you have Vairagya and you have Vidya. You have knowledge and detachment. Anyway, so Lord Chaitanya, he ran like that. And then Sarvabhauma said, oh, this is my Lord. This is not good for you to go so close to your beloved because you completely explode in ecstasy and completely lose yourself and fall unconscious and we lose your association and you enter into an internal bhav and then it's dangerous for you. You may become injured when you fall down on the ground in that ecstasy. Please take darshan from a distance. So from that point on, Lord Chaitanya started standing at the Gurudastambha, which is, how far is Gurudastambha from Jagannath? 100 meters or 50 meters or? There's Jagannath deity, and if you walk from Jagannath deity to Gurudastambha, how far? Huh? 20 meters. So he's standing about 20 meters away, which is about, he's standing where Prabhupada's Vyasasana is in the temple, from there to Radhaparta Sarthi. So we have to, 50 meters. I'm thinking it must be more than, I don't have the ID card to get inside. So I have to see through your eyes. All right, so it's more than that. It's more than the distance that I've mentioned, because that's 20 meters. And the idea is that from that distance, maybe the experience of ecstasy wouldn't be so overwhelming for the Lord. So that's why he would stand at the Gurudastambha. But we see that even when Lord Chaitanya was standing at the Gurudastambha, he'd be holding onto the Gurudastambha, but he'd be so much melt. He'd be so much ecstasy boiling in his body and just rising through his body, just seeing his Lord, that his ecstasy would be so powerful that it would melt the stone. And he left his fingerprints there in the stone. So this is we're being reminded of this ecstatic experience of Lord Chaitanya standing at the Gurudastambha. So what this means is that for us to attain the eternal service of Radha and Krishna as Prabhupada said, in the bushes of Vrindavan, Prabhupada says in the Krishna book, if you want to attain service of Radha and Krishna in the bushes, in the Nikunj, Braja Nikunj, then you must attain, you can only enter or arrive there by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. So the leelas and pastimes of Lord Chaitanya are very much required for us, and of course they're very relishable. And what happens is that we travel and we go from temple to temple, and especially a feature of temples, if they're built according to Vastu Shastra, that they make Gurudastambha there. And when you see the Gurudastambha, you can remember Lord Chaitanya, and you can actually enter into his pastimes a little bit in Jagannath Puri. Stamba actually is one of the symptoms of sattvic vikar. Transformation of the body is to be stunned. Stamba also means stunned, stambena. So Garuda Stamba, it's also an interesting point that Lord Chaitanya is standing at the Garuda Stamba, but he's also stunned. Stunned means like stunned, astonished, astounded. So this is another inner meaning of him, why, him standing at Garuda Stamba, because he's also exhibiting this ecstasy. And when Krishna and the gopis, when Krishna boarded the chariot of Akrura, and when Akrura took Krishna and Balaram to Mathura for the Danar Jagya, the wrestling match with, and ultimately was to be the death of Kamsa, the gopis were in great distress, and they came out to try to stop Krishna and hold the horses and lay down in front of the chariot and pull on his dhoti and appeal to him and cry and in so many ways tried to stop him. And then it's described as Krishna was, as Akrura, who was supposedly not cruel, but he was very cruel because he took Krishna away from their hearts and away from their lives. That's Hare Krishna. When Akrura was taking Krishna out of Vrindavan, it's described that the gopis were watching. They were watching the chariot, the flag on that. They were watching Krishna. The chariot was going away, going towards Mathura, and their eyes were riveted on the chariot. Their eyes were fixed on the chariot of Akrura taking Krishna Bhava, and they're watching, and they were just frozen there and watching the chariot. And then it's described, after they couldn't see the chariot, they're watching the dust from the wheels of the chariot. Because when the chariot is going, the dust, there's so much dust. So they're just seeing this dust cloud. And it's described that they were completely stunned. They were stamba. The gopis were completely in this sattvic bhava, being stunned in transcendental ecstasy due to this separation from the Lord. And it's described in the Bhagavatam that they look just like figures painted on a canvas. Thus they give a painting of some people on a canvas, a painting of some gopis. They're not moving, they're not speaking, they're not moving their heads, they're not blinking or anything. It looked like figures drawn on a painting. It looked like figures on a painting. They were completely motionless. And they were just as if their life came out of their bodies, and they were just standing there lifelessly. And practically speaking, that's what happened. Because when we say that, when they would address Krishna, the gopis would address Krishna as, "Oh Pranavallabha, oh my beloved, the beloved of my life, oh Pranavallabha." They would say, "Oh Prananath, you're the Lord of my life. You're the beloved of my life." And that means that ordinarily a person's dearest thing is his heart. And everyone else, "Oh, my heart." You know, they're worried about their heart. You know, and they're always getting their heart checked up. There's always something wrapped around here. Pup, 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 pup. "Oh yes, your BP is okay. Your blood pressure is okay." "Oh, phew." And your heart is, you're 70 over 140 or 68 or whatever, whatever the numbers are. So it's a very nice verse here describing Lord Chaitanya after he takes darshan of Jagannath in the temple. He's standing at the Garuda Stamba and he's taking darshan of Vrajendranandan and Krishna. Then he comes home, and it says when he comes back to his house at Kashi Mishra, he has a small room in Kashi Mishra's house called the Gambira. And he used to sit on the ground and mark it with his nails. It's Naka. It says, Nake Kari Prithvi, Prithvi Likan. Likan. Likana. 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 He used to draw lines on the Prithvi. Prithvi is Mother Earth. He used to draw lines with his nails. So, then it says, at such times he would be greatly morose and he would cry, "Ha ha! Kahan Vrindavan! Kahan Gopendranandan! Kahan Se Vamshi Vadan! Kahan, Kahan, where are you? Where is Krishna, the king of the coward men? Where is the person who plays the flute? Oh, ha, ha, where is Vrindavan?" So this is time after time after time, and place after place after place, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is teaching the Gaudiya Siddhanta. What is the Siddhanta? What is the end of the perfection, the end, the perfectional end of our philosophy, the Siddhanta? Gaudiya philosophy, is to always feel separation from Krishna and always try to see Krishna in everything and everyone. Like you see a little girl like this, and she's very sweet and has different qualities. So then immediately your mind thinks, well, Radharani, she was born in Raval. And she stayed there for 3 or 4 years, and then she moved to Ral. Krishna went from Gokul to Chatikar, and Radharani went from Raval to Ral. And then Radharani went from Ral to Barsana. And Krishna went from Chatikar to Nandagram. And Radharani went from Barsana to Yavat. And at different ages. So when she was four, five, six, she was in Ral. And so that means she was a little girl. Because in Boma Vrindavan, Krishna and Radharani exhibit the pastimes of growing up. So it means she was like little like this, and little hair like this. And maybe, so we don't think, oh, you're a cute little girl. We think, oh, so nice, Krishna sent you as an Udipan to think of Radharani when she was in her Balya Leela, when she was in her Poganda Leela. So this is, Lord Chaitanya is in the mood, of course he's in the mood of Radharani searching for Krishna. So you also see, when you read Krishna Leela, Braj Leela, that's why to experience Braj Leela through the heart and mind of Lord Chaitanya, this is the perfectional, this is the way by which Gaudiya Vaishnavas experience Braj Leela, by which we attain the adhikar to enter Braj Leela, by which we attain the qualification and the expertise to serve Radha and Krishna and Vrindavan through the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his representatives. So in this particular instance, we're shown, Lord Chaitanya is showing us, he takes darshan of Jagannath, who he calls Gopendra, Gopendra Nandan. And he says, and he comes home, he starts, like sometimes a little kid will do that with their toe, or they'll be drawing on the ground. So when you study Krishna's Leela, you also see that sometimes the gopis, they're waiting in the kunj near Govardhan, and they're waiting for Krishna. He's supposed to come there in the afternoon and meet them, kind of sneak away from the coward boys and meet them in different kunjas there near Chandra Sarovara. And then he doesn't come, and they're remorseful, and they're saying, where's Gopendra? They're saying the same thing. They're saying, where's Gopendra Nandan? Where is he? And they're leaning on each other's shoulder, or they have their arms on each other, and they're with their toes are just going in the ground, going back and forth, just drawing lines in the ground with their toes. So Lord Chaitanya is doing the same thing. So this is, of course, this is a very high mood, but this is his mood as Radharani and Radha Bhav, his mood of separation. So this is what the Goswamis came to teach also, as sadhakas. As sadhakas, they were looking everywhere in Vrindavan, and they had this mood, hey Radhe Vrajadevi Kechalalite, hey, where is Krishna? So just like someone came here, one of the devotees came here, and he said, oh, I saw the white clouds today. And I saw the white clouds, and I thought, oh, Balaram. You know, Balaram's described his body as very effulgent and very white and glowing like a white cloud, a rainless cloud. After the rainy season, the clouds are all empty of their water. The clouds pour out all their water. They empty their water on the plains and the land, and then they become white. But when they're full of water, they're black. So this is Krishna's like that, Ghanasham. So where is Krishna playing the flute? That is the mood of chanting also. The more we can cultivate this mood when we're chanting japa, the more our japa will be productive when we're chanting. It should be a crying mood, just like one time someone heard Indra's tape. Indra was chanting, this godbrother of ours, Indra, we gave you, and said, he didn't know the person, he never saw the person, the Indian person. He says, well, that person sounds like he's crying. And when he's chanting in kirtan, it sounds like he's crying. There's some mood. There's a mood mixed in like roha. What was it? Roha? Rona? Rona bhav? Crying? Roha? Rona? Rona bhav. His bhav is like crying. He's crying. It's not like sometimes we lead kirtan, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama. You know, it sounds like some carnival. It's a carnival, it's a circus, and that may be your mood. That's because there are all different ragas, and there's all different moods, and different times of the day, and that is a fact. But at least in this case, this person was observing that the overall mood of every one of his kirtans was crying for Krishna. a reaching out, a crying out. And so that is the mood of our chanting. And it's interesting that our Guru Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada, he gave us that bhav. He said, this is, you chant like this, these 32 syllables, these 16 words, but it should be done with this particular bhav. What is that bhav? Huh? Crying. He said it should be crying like a child crying for his mother. Hey Krishna, hey Radha. So we can ask ourselves, how many times in a month have I ever, in a year, have I cried? Have I cried my rounds? Like we ask each other, oh, like a husband may ask his wife if he has any concern for her soul. If he cares about her soul, which is unusual. But if he cares about her soul, he'll say, oh, Devi. Old style. He'll say, my dear Devi, did you cry your rounds today? He won't say, did you chant your rounds today? Because a parrot, you can teach the shuk to chant the rounds. He can chant the rounds, but can he cry? Can he cry the rounds? He can imitate. He has enough brain power to imitate the sound of your voice, but I don't think he can cry. So we have to, the husband may ask his wife, oh, Devi, did you cry your rounds today? Did you finish crying your rounds? We usually, did you finish chanting your rounds? Oh, yeah, I finished. 16. So that this is not the way we do it. We should actually cry. Because if you're wondering why am I not advancing? It's because I'm not crying for Krishna. This is what Lord Chaitanya came to teach. He came to teach cry for Krishna. Prabhupada came to teach cry for Krishna. He told us day one, cry for Krishna. You should chant your rounds like a child crying for his mother. You forget. You're big boys now, big girls. So you forgot. You think I don't cry.
I'm a big man now. I don't cry. My voice changed now. I'm not a little boy anymore.
But believe it or not, you were 3 years old and you fell down and cracked your head one time on your bicycle and you cried. You really cried. Like in that high-pitched voice of a little boy, and you really cried, believe it or not, although you've forgotten it. You're covered over with forgetfulness. But so many hundreds of times, you ask your mother, Mother, did I ever cry? I don't believe I ever cried. Oh, yes, I think you did once. Yeah, I can remember one time, I wrote it in my diary. There was one day you cried. One day, maybe 1,000 days or 1,000,000 days. So many millions of times a child would cry. That's part of growing up. Crying. But when we come to Krishna consciousness, there's also a fact. Growing up in Krishna consciousness means crying. It's part of growing up. Growing up means growing your bhakti lata. And growing your bhakti lata up means to produce many leaves. And more leaves, more strength. More strength, more height. More height, more sun. More sun, more flowers. More flowers, more fruits. And fruit is what we're looking for. Prema phal. So that growth we want, so to attain that growth in Krishna consciousness, we have to cry. We have to cry for Krishna. But we become insensitive due to false ego, due to pride, due to various contaminations of material illusion. We become too big to cry, too hard to cry, too proud to cry, too foolish to cry, and therefore we miss the chance to attain the mercy of Krishna. Because the price we pay, the price to pay to gain the mercy of Krishna is to cry for Krishna. One time our godbrother, Gorgovinda Maharaj, he gave a lecture in, I think it was in Bhubaneswar, and he said, here in this temple here, Prabhupada's temple, Krishna Balar Mandir, I'm opening a crying school. I'm opening a crying school, a school for crying in Bhubaneswar. And I want to teach all of you how to cry Krishna. So he was explaining that this is the purpose of his temple there in Bhubaneswar, to cry for Krishna. So this is one point. So next verse. Kahanse Tribangatam, Kahanse Venugan, Kahanse Jamunapulina, Kahanse Rasabilas, Kahan Ritya Gitahas, Kahan Prabhu Madan Mohan. Mahaprabhu used to lament by saying, Kahan Se Tribangatam, Kahan Se Venugan. Where is Sri Krishna who is curved in three places? Tribanga Lalitam Niyataprakasham. Where is the sweet sound of his flute? Venugan. Kahanse Yamuna Pulin. Where is the sweet bank of the Yamuna? Kahanse Rasavilas. Where is the rasa dance? Where is that singing and dancing and laughing? Kahan Nritya, Kahan Gita, Kahan Hasa. Kahan Prabhu Madan Mohan. Kahan Prabhu. Kahan Prabhu Madan Mohan. Where is Madan Mohan, the attractor and chanter of Cupid? Utila Nana, let's see. Utila Nana Bhava Vega, Mane Haile Ud Vega, Shana Matra Nare Gona Ite, Prabala Virahanale, Daraya Haile Taranale, Nana Shloka Lagi La Padite. In this way, various ecstatic emotions evolved, and Mahaprabhu's mind was filled with anxiety. Nana Bhava Vega. It's vague. We know this word, right? Vague. Vega. From Upadeshamrita. We have different Vegas. Mahaprabhu has Bhava Vega. Bhava Vega. Nana Bhava. Nana Bhava Vega. Various Bhavas. Forth the pushing of various Bhavas. There's Sanchari Bhavas. There's 33 Vyabhachari Bhavas. There's Sanchari Bhavas which are pushing. They're pushing weight like waves on the ocean of his Thai Bhav. Is Madhurya, Rasa Sindhu. And then, so these are pushings. So we have pushings also. We're being pushed also, right? Vacho Vegam. What was it? Vacho Vegam, Krodha Vegam, Manasa Vegam, Jiva Vegam. All these pushings. All these. Are, we're also being pushed by the Vega. Pushings, waves of anger, waves of talking and so many uncontrolled things. But this is, when you become Krishna conscious, you're also pushed by different waves. Shana Matra Nare Gona Ite. He could not escape even for a moment. In this way, because of fierce feelings of separation. Fierce feelings of separation. Prabala, powerful. Prabala Viraha Anale means fire. His patience began to totter, and he began to recite various verses. So, these are just to hear these topics of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because he is Madan Madanyaya. He is very magnanimous, and he is very merciful. It is a fact that we have no qualification to hear these topics. It is a fact that these topics are way beyond our level of advancement. It is a fact that we may not understand or perceive any of these realities until three or four lifetimes from now. That is a fact. But nevertheless, because Mahaprabhu is merciful and his devotees are even more merciful, they are sharing these things. When Krishnadas Kaviraj was writing this book, sometimes he hesitated and he said, I shouldn't write this. No one's qualified to understand it. This was 500 years ago. No one is qualified to perceive this or understand it. Nobody has the adhikar to even to take off the lid of this jar, what to speak of, eat the contents. No one's even qualified to unscrew the cap, unscrew the cap, what to speak of, drink the contents. Nevertheless, I'm being forced by the will of Lord Chaitanya to distribute this nectar, this Amrit Sudha, this nectarine. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we will receive something by hearing this. Just by hearing these things, although, just like they have the story, there was four blind men, and they asked the four blind men, they said, there is something here we want you to describe, we want you to perceive it and describe it. So the four blind, they led the four blind men out to an open area, to a yard, and they brought an elephant inside, and they said, okay, now you go and touch this object and tell us what it is. So one person one blind man, he got a hold of the trunk. The nose, you know, the trunk of the elephant. And he's feeling it, and he says, it is a banyan tree or something. it is a root of a banyan tree. And then someone else grabbed a leg, and he said, this is some rock. This is some heavy rock, some very heavy rock placed on the ground. It's an elephant's footprint. I mean, the footprint of an elephant. We have one in Mayapur. It's about this big around. It's a huge thing. So, and Jesse, when he felt the leg, he thought it was a big rock. And someone else grabbed the tail, and he thought it was some snake or something. And someone else was touching the belly of the elephant. And he thought, it's some big boulder or some, I don't know what it is, a balloon or something. So in this way, they had no idea what the reality of the elephant was, because they were unqualified. So we're all hearing these topics, and we're all getting something different. One person is catching this, one person is catching that, one person is catching something else, according to our qualification. But nevertheless, these topics are the highest subject matter, because they are about the prema of Mahaprabhu. And this prema he has come to distribute. He has come to distribute Krishna prema. Krishna prema pradayate. He has come to distribute Krishna prema. So what is Krishna prema? What does it look like? What does it smell like? What does it taste like? What does it feel like? What are its characteristics? How does it move? How does it sit? How does it walk? To understand all these things, we have to hear about the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. What is his moods? Because we want to follow in the footsteps of the residents of Vrindavan. So that means to follow in the footsteps of Lord Chaitanya and the six Goswamis. So to hear about their feelings of separation, to hear about their heart, although it's very high, nevertheless, it's very purifying. Because this creates rag. There's two kinds of bhakti. There's Vaidhi bhakti, Vaidhi sadhana bhakti, and then there's Raganuga bhakti. So both of those, of course, lead to bhava bhakti. But the platform of Vaidhi sadhana is a platform of duty, a platform of rules and regulations. And the type of bhava that produces, and also takes some good amount of time, the bhava is not as deep. The type of bhava that's produced by the practice of sadhana bhakti, Vaidhi sadhana, is not so powerful, not so intense. It's generally, it unfolds and develops a type of Vaikuntha bhava. But when you develop your sadhana in the mood of attachment for Krishna, rag, actually you have a deep attachment and affection for Krishna, which is developed by seeing his deities, by seeing deity forms of Krishna, you develop rag and attachment to the deity form of Krishna. And by hearing his intimate pastimes, the pastimes of Mahaprabhu and Radha and Krishna, you develop a tense attachment and attraction to the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. So by being attached, by having rag for the beautiful form of Krishna and the beautiful pastimes of Krishna, you develop a type of bhav called Rajabhav. You develop a very powerful and intense bhava when you come through that type of Raganuga sadhana and come to bhava bhakti. That level of bhava bhakti is very deep. And that type of bhava bhakti can deepen so much that you can even control the Supreme Lord Krishna, Murligar. So this, by hearing these particular pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, it creates rag. What is happening imperceptibly, you may not understand, but your hearts are becoming attached to the pastimes of Krishna through the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya, who is enacting the pastimes of Radharani searching for Krishna. That is the beauty of Chaitanya Charitamrita. So that is why Prabhupada gave us this book. Because Prabhupada wants us all to enter Vrindavan and live there. He said, this is my home and you are my children. Prabhupada said, Vrindavan is my home. So home is where the father lives with his family and the children. So Prabhupada wants the children to live in Vrindavan. To live in Vrindavan means to live in Vrajabhav, to cultivate Vrajabhav. And that is what Lord Chaitanya came to teach, and that is what he came to give. So Prabhupada built a house in Vrindavan for everyone to live. We have that expression. So Prabhupada's in the house, the father's in the house, and he said, my home is Vrindavan. My place of worship is Mahaprabhu's lotus feet, Mayapur. Because he's telling you want to get to the home, you have to worship the mayor of the town. The mayor of the town is Mahaprabhu. So you worship him in Mayapur, and you worship Mahaprabhu, and you get a place inside the village. And the home is Vrindavan. So he's the mayor of the whole place. And then Prabhupada said his office is Bombay, because that's where he was organized his preaching. In other words, Bombay represents the material world. The material world. And Mayapur represents the mercy of Mahaprabhu by which you enter into the home of Vrindavan. So we all individually have our place in the material world, which is our plane of service. It's called Prabhu Datta Desh. The Desh, or the place given by our Prabhu for service. But our service ultimately leads us to the lotus feet of Mahaprabhu. And by the mercy of Mahaprabhu, we get Nitya Seva in Braja Vrindavan, Braja Gokul. So this is why, this is this beautiful connection Prabhupada gave us. So your home may be Delhi, but everyone's home is whatever. But everyone's place of worship is Mayapur, and everyone's home is Vrindavan. At least that was Prabhupada's offering to the world. So when Prabhupada said, my place of worship is Mayapur, oh, that's nice. Well, not mine. My place of worship is Pandharpur. And my place of worship is Madras. No, I'm sorry. It's not. If you're a Gaudiya Vaishnava, your place of worship is the lotus feet of Mahaprabhu. And his lotus feet are eternally placed in Mayapur Dham. So like Prabhupada, our place of worship is Mayapur. And like Prabhupada, at least, our place of, our home is Sri Vrindavan Dham. And because our father's there, and I want to be with the father. Of course, he's not exactly in a fatherly position there. No, he's also in a fatherly position because he's as guru, but he may be guru sakhi, and father means he's engaging the servant and his son in service. So the guru sakhi will also engage his disciple in service. Sometimes people outside of ISKCON, they criticize ISKCON. They say, ah, you guys are always saying, preach, preach, preach. You guys don't do any bhajan, and you don't know anything, and you know, just do bhajan and then preach. And that is a fact, that there's no bhajan, there's no strength for preaching. But one thing I realized, there has to be bhajan. There has to be strong bhajan to do good preaching. And the best preaching is done by someone who loves God. And someone who has prema, he attains prema by intense lifetimes and lifetimes of bhajan and Vaishnava kripa. So he, of course, the prema bhakta, rasika bhakta, does the best and biggest and most profound and successful preaching. Well, one thing I've realized, that Prabhupada must have realized also, why he pushed his disciples so much to preach, and why now they... is that when one preaches, although he may not have much behind him, when one actually engages in the activity of trying to preach, as Prabhupada said, the problem I see is that people preach beyond their realization. If your realization is that I have enough potency and enough realization to preach for an hour a day, then you go out for an hour a day. But if the temple pushes you out for 8 hours a day to preach, then you're beyond your realization because you're overwhelmed by Maya and you can't handle it. That's the problem. Like some bhakta say, I can preach. And he goes out for an hour and he says, okay, I've had enough. Let me go back. So let him come back. But that's the problem. Like, you push him out. But what I see is when a person engages in the activity of preaching, somehow or other, there's a dynamic connection between the preacher and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And when the person is preaching, trying to sincerely represent the Lord and his guru, waves, or at least, let's say ripples or waves of realization come to that speaker when he's speaking Krishna Katha. And I don't know, I think anyone who's ever actually spoken to someone about Krishna has had that experience. Just now, we were speaking some things about Chaitanya Charitamrita and Prabhupada, and while we were speaking, as if we were like hearing someone else was speaking. That's what we say, Vyasa-san. This is the Vyasa-san. Just like in Vrindavan when they have Ras Lila, they dress up the boys, the young boys, they train them from, you know, 4 years old, they train them how to walk, how to sit like a gopi, how to stand like a gopi. It's intense training. You think when you go to see these Ras Lila performances, oh, it's just some cute little kids, they come out and go like this, and oh, Krishna, oh, Priyati. And they dance around with their high-pitched voices. You think it's very cute. But there's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears behind, like years and years of training before these boys go out and play the role of Radha and Krishna and the gopis in Ras Lila performances, you know, you see in Vrindavan. They start at 4 years old. They're taught how to walk, how to talk, how to sing, how to sit, everything by their teachers. And a very intense heart, hours and hours and hours a day of practice. And then they come when they're 9 years old, they play their first, you know, public appearance as Krishna. So what is told, according to the Shastras, Narayan Bhatta Goswami and others have written different points on this, they say that when these boys are playing the part of Radha and Krishna. When they put the mukut on, when Radharani puts her mukut and Krishna puts his mukut, at that time they become Krishna Avesh and Radha Avesh. That boy becomes Krishna, and that girl becomes Radha. I mean, that those they're all boys. They're celibate. They're all celibate young, you know, they're before puberty, generally, before they've reached adulthood. That is considered that that boy has now become Krishna and the girl is Radharani. So that's why when they're dancing and they're doing the performance, everyone comes up and touches their feet. They offer aarti to them. They offer donations to them. Because the consideration is Radha and Krishna are here and performing and we're worshipping them. And there's some shastra to support this. And there's even pastimes that they tell the teachers. Har Govind. There's one teacher named, one person, Har Govind, who has a troupe. And he tells these different stories how someone was, I forget, someone challenged one boy. He said, oh, if you're Krishna, you should be able to dance on these cobras, or something like that. And so he was some kind of demoniac person, so he had like a bag of cobras, a box of cobras. He went on the stage and he let them loose. And so the boy was wearing a mukut of Krishna, so he just jumped on the cobras and started dancing. And the cobras were biting him. Like anything. And then the boy's just playing his flute and nothing happened. No, he didn't get dyed or anything. There's different stories like this that we heard. And but then when they take the mukut off, then they're not Krishna anymore. And so when they carry the boy, sometimes the boy's to a performance and they go to another place and do another performance in the same day. So they get in the car, but when they get to the place and they don't walk on the ground because Krishna and Radha never walk on the ground. They always put Krishna on their shoulders and they carry Krishna. He's going into some hall or something where he's going to perform. He's riding on the shoulders of his teacher or his elder brother or something who's not dressed as a gopi. Then he gets on the stage, which is the Ras Mandal. The stage represents Raja Vrindavan. And he performs. So what I'm saying, this whole story, this is called a tangential point. But this tangent is simply to support the idea that the Vyasa-san is empowered by Vyasadeva. Just like the boy and the two boys are empowered by the mukut and by the lila, actually they're empowered. It's called Shakti Avesh. They're empowered with the Shakti of Radha and Krishna. So this Vyasa-san, when one sits on the Vyasa-san to represent Vyasa, he's empowered by the parampara and by Vyasadeva to speak. So therefore, when you speak Krishna Katha, realizations come. So that's why Prabhupada encouraged everyone to preach, because when you preach, then things come through you. You become the medium, just like there's these tantrics. They go into trance, and then you ask them a question. Well, what happened to my wife? Oh, she ran away with your boss. She ran away with your boss, and they went to Bombay, you know. And they go like this. Like there's these guys in Bengal in Navadvip. They're tantrics. They go into a trance. They carry a skull around. I saw it myself with my eyes. They carry a skull and they go into a trance and then they fall on the ground and they put the skull on their chest. And they lie there, everybody gathers, they usually do it in a public square and everybody gathers around them. Everybody's looking. And then they start asking questions. And then they ask, and the skull, it's all bones, you know, the skull is sitting on his chest. And then they ask him questions to the tantric. They say, hey, you know, am I going to win the lottery or I don't know, whatever they ask, it was all in Bengali. And then what happens is the skull starts moving. The skull, the jaw in the skull goes like this. It's moving, and then the guy is speaking, though. The skull is going like this, but the guy goes, he speaks. It sounds funny, but this is, you know, there's unlimited far-out things in India. You know, let me tell you that. I mean, I've been here for, you know, you're born here or there or whatever, but I've seen a lot. I've seen a whole lot. I've been coming here for 20 years, living here for 10. I've seen a lot of things. I have a karma to run into all these things also. I'm always, even when I was in America, I used to go to circuses and see all these kind of guys. Anyway, so the amazing things can happen. So that's why Prabhupada encouraged us to preach, because things can come through you and come to you, and it's called realizations. And that helps you, enhances your Krishna consciousness, and helps you advance. So we saw just now when we were speaking, some things came out through us, like a medium or like a medium type thing. And then I heard them, I said, oh, well, that's interesting. that's right. I was listening as a hearer. It was coming out, but I was separated from it. That's like when this OBE, it's called out-of-body experience. OBE, it's out-of-body experience. When a person's on the operating table, there's many clinical studies of this. He's heavy surgery, he's under all these drugs, anesthesia. But he tells later, he said, out of body means the soul leaves the body, hovers above the body, and he observes the people in the amphitheater operating on his heart. And he tells people about it later. I said, why he cut my chest cavity open and he slipped and he cut the aorta, and the blood was sending, and he had to sew me up in emergency because the doctor doesn't tell you everything but the mistakes he made when he had you cut open. But the guy was out of his body and he observed it and he reported about it. And the doctor said, you're right. So this is the fact that you can actually be separated from your body because the soul is separated from the body. And that's what happens when you dream. You leave the gross body and your subtle body, and your soul is maintained. Your soul maintains a connection to the gross body by a thin string. These strings are called nadis. They're called nadis. There's 160,000 nadis or something. It's described in the yoga shastras. There's fine nerve currents. There's a very, almost like a string. It's called a nerve thread. It's called the silver cord. It's called the silver cord. It's actually because it's silver in color, actually. It's a silver cord which connects the soul to the body. You travel in a subtle platform. It's called astral travel. You go actually other places and come back. But because you have some karma, you're still connected to that body and you'll come back. And sometimes there's many far out things. You get cut. Your connection gets cut and then your body is still going but the soul is not there, and there's many far out things. Yogis are going to trance and they think the person is dead because he's left the body. The body is still being maintained by the super soul. Super soul is there, but the soul is gone, traveling to another planet. There's stories of yogis. And people see him sitting there. He's been there for a year, and I think he must be dead. And they bury him. And he comes back and comes out of the ground. That's what I have these stories. People come out of the ground. How did he come out of the ground? How did he live under the ground? There's many parallels.